You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives. And our guest for this next hour is, if I'm going to get his name pronounced correctly, I misplaced my cheat sheet. Alorja, yes. with the R, Alorja or Aloja?
Aloja.
Aloja. Ahirewele.
Ahirewele, yes. Close enough.
Ahirewele. Okay, good. And Aloja, you are an immigrant to the United States and to Ithaca.
Correct.
And just in a thumbnail sketch, what are some important pieces of the mosaic that is your life that we need to know? Take a minute to just kind of tell us who you are.
Yeah, I always, over time, have thought about what would be the best way to describe myself. And I always say I'm one who has traveled or is traveling in a landscape of grace, and I want to clarify that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I am whatever I am now so much by the grace of God, because I have stumbled onto a lot of blessings that I really did not plan.
Right,
and
right.
That's what has been. So I see myself as one who travels in a landscape of grace. I feel that everything that I have been, whether mm-hmm. it's where I was born, the siblings I had, the grandparents that I had, the teachers I met in school, the friends who have supported me over the years, and the places that I have been to, mm-hmm. let's just say the places, the faces, the phases mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. my life have all been under this umbrella of grace.
And where are those places, just quickly, so we can get a sense of
I was born in the Midwestern part of Nigeria in a town called Ekpoma, which is hard to pronounce for most people, but Ekpoma, E-K-P-O-M-A, and this is in the Benin Kingdom of Midwestern Nigeria. We lived in the smaller village of this big town, and we moved from place to place, moved to another town. Then I went to medical school in Ife, which is southwestern part mm-hmm. of Nigeria. Then came over to England, where I got married, stayed there for some years, then went back to Nigeria to practice as a medical doctor. Then came back to London, where I pastored for years, then came to the U.S. So it's been a journey.
Yes. It sounds like it. Now, what music would you like to start with?
Yeah, I would like to start with Way Back Home by Junior Walker, who actually played and recorded on the Motown. So that's
sure.
it brings me right to, we can talk more about
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so go ahead and put it on. This is good.
Take in my mouth.
and that's Way Back Home by Junior Walker and the All Stars. And our guest on this hour is Aloja Aweweweli. I'm going to get it right sooner or later.
Yeah. In fact, I make it easier for everybody. I say, call me Aloja because I'm the only one by that name in this country. Yes. So
you'd be the only one by the other name too, but it's a lot harder to pronounce.
And everywhere I've been. So everybody, almost like James Bond. You know? Aloja. Aloja. Yes. Okay.
Yes. And in that spirit, what brought you to Ithaca? What about this? And the landscape of grace, that is the most... that is a traditional theological concept.
That's true.
But it's not one that anyone has used on the show before, but it captures this notion of movement with a center of meaning. But what brought you to Ithaca?
Yeah, it's interesting because my wife and I, when we came into the States, we lived in Maryland for 5 months, and then she got a call from Colgate University because in London she had applied to be an assistant professor at Colgate, but she completely forgotten. So we were in Maryland thinking of how to begin to settle in the U.S. And she got this call, and eventually she got the job. So we stayed at Colgate for 2 years, but it was just a contract year to year. And she applied while there in 1999 for a tenure track position at Ithaca College to teach in politics. And I remember, you know, we drove into Ithaca on a cloudy day. She had the interview and... she was offered the position. Mm-hmm. We also went to Tennessee, Chattanooga, and she was also offered a position there. But, you know, we thought about it, and like most people of faith, my wife and I, we can talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
But we thought about it and tried to bring into play what we're used to in terms of how we usually are guided, and eventually decided we'll come to Ithaca College, and that's what brought us to Ithaca.
Right.
And over the years, that has proven to be the right decision because, again, of the encounters of grace that we've had in this place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So continuing that, you know, same theme of always a landscape of grace, never really earning, but being showered with this favor.
Okay. And can you tell me, because I think this is a good time since we've used the term, what does it mean to make the decision in a way that respects your faith and this notion of being a graceful recipient of what's possible as opposed to a go-getter?
Yeah. And that is the way, as time has gone on for us to decide what we do, it's always been, I didn't come here by myself. I didn't bring myself to this earth. Mm-hmm. There's one who did, and I firmly believe that. And if he did, in English, we always use the word he for God, but in my language, you don't have to. That's the burden of the English language. So if I use he, just, you know, let's take it that way. But we, you know, the one who made all things. If he...
the one who makes all things possible.
Yeah, possible. If he choose to put me in the mix of this, you know, plan, then there must be something that we have to do. It could be that mine is just to move a chair. Mm-hmm. But in this scheme of things, he has a plan. And so it's always good for us, and for us as a family, we go back to say, you know, is this in line with what you have deemed fit to lead our lives through? Mm-hmm. And that's how we came to that peaceful conclusion. And we run it through a number of things. Am I doing this because it's just going to further my economic interest? It's going to further my professional interest? Or what is the reason behind it? And all of those things can eventually come, but they're not the primary reasons. The primary reason being here, this is the only place I could be right now that would fit the rest of the gracious dealing of God in our lives. And that's how we came to that conclusion. And some friends confirmed it. We, you know, you have seek the wisdom of other friends and people who you trust.
What I'm seeing is a process of looking at it from 360. There's a rabbinic saying, you don't know something until you've seen it from 360 degrees.
I like that.
And what I'm hearing in you is you don't move too fast so that you can process and look at it from these many, many ways, and then it becomes clear so that there is one or basically the next step is clear.
Yes, and even when that step is revealed or is understood, let's just take for instance, I mean, somebody will think Abraham crazy. God says to him, get out from where you are. You can't explain that to anybody. But in the when you do take the first step, that's not all. Because later on in the journey, you will have confirmatory steps to say yes. Because if you made a detour, and I think we all are capable of doing that, you can always retrace your steps and go back to where you were. So you do have steps that eventually confirm that, yes, this journey, where you are heading, this is the direction. Yeah, so that has happened over the years here being in Ithaca. We have, every year we continue to, ask ourselves, did we come? And yes, resoundingly, yes. Yeah, so that,
Have in your life of making decisions in this way, have you ever had the sense that, no, we need to make a radical change now? We need to change our direction now?
Yes. When our second trip to the UK, when my wife and I left with our daughter, who was 4 years old, to return to London, we basically went on exile. There were some political issues that made it impossible for us to be in Nigeria. And we were in the UK and had a son there, and everybody was saying, why don't you just stay in the UK? Because it was easier.
Right.
But we had, a sense that we were coming to the States. And it wasn't clear what we were really doing in the U.S. And it looked more daunting because we didn't have medical coverage and we didn't know how we were going to settle into the community.
Right.
And we were reading a lot about the U.S. and we didn't want to come here and be, be beholden to, the way immigrants are perceived, coming to take.
You wanted to come with your dignity.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to come with their dignity.
I wanted to come here knowing that if I came, I would be contributing to the society, and I had gift, but it's also a privilege. You see, my wife and I very strongly believe that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. I know nations draw their own boundaries, but I really believe that the owner of the universe is the maker.
Right.
And he can send us as his children to wherever he wants. Every one of us, every nation, we are like tenants.
Right.
Yes. So,
and whether or not you believe in God, there's the notion that the earth and its fullness moves regardless of what human beings try to do to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes in response in ways that humans cannot control, even though they instigated it, like global warming with another guest that we've had. Yeah. It's just like,
It is. So we eventually, that decision was every step had to, was fraught with so much difficulty and just, we cannot even get into that, but eventually we came here. So that was a difficult decision, and I look back now and say, yes, it was good to. Once in a while, you want to be in a place in your life where you've taken risks that push you beyond your normal comfort level and stretch you out, because that really stretched us out in many ways. There were so many faces that needed to come together, and I'm glad we did.
Right, and. What I've known many couples. You immigrated with two children in tow.
Yes.
And two careers, and you were going to have to basically give up what you'd trained for, but you'd already done that in moving back to England.
Yes.
How did you talk with each other? What was the quality of your conversations that allowed you to work through this very possibly fraught and painful decision in a way that could be grace-filled?
And that's the advantage that my wife and I have as a couple, is that we both came into this landscape of grace in our different ways as teenagers, and we had started learning the process of submitting our wills and our desires to, to our Creator and
to each other.
To each other, yes. Yeah. And that's how we. And that's how we came together. We talked about our own understanding of life, our goals, and the things that we felt were important to us. So when we came here and my wife applied to teach at Colgate, I actually remember I was walking up and down on Hewitt Avenue, off Georgia Avenue in Maryland, and I said to her, I have a strong feeling that I'm not going to be going back to medicine. But my wife knows I've always struggled with medical field, or being a pastor, or being an artist, because I read medicine, but my heart is really, more of pastoral care and being an artist. So your question of, so what will you do? And again, this is why I say, Whatever decision is made, you judge it by the steps that follow, the opportunities, and I would say the blessings that follow, because it was a real blessing for me to be able to work with the American Red Cross and talk with a director there, and they said, well, you come work with our program, which is where I spent 13 years. That, again, I see as an emblem of grace. So it allowed me, while not working as a medical doctor with all the, you know, the time constraint and the pressures, and while my wife was, you know, getting, because the tenure track position is a very difficult, strenuous position.
And two children,
and then we had a third one at Colgate. So just the that. So we continue to talk about many things. I'm in the process again of also of making another career change, or, you know, moving it to another a level of my, you know, of what we call our calling. And we've sat down, we've talked about this, and we look around and try to use the wisdom of not only our learning, but those who know us. This process of, you know, real honest, you know, conversation with ourselves, you know, with our maker, and then talking to those who know us and who are able to say, this is aligned with what we see your life. You know, this is what it is. And so that's what made it, in terms of being at peace with what you had to do. But it didn't stop us from going through the difficulties of, you know, just the process, you know, the economic, you know, constraint, the just raising children.
Day-to-day, you know, life, the conflicts you get into.
Somebody says, the problems of today and tomorrow. That's just, you know, that's it. It's been like that. Yes.
Right. What you have described is I think a mix of Christianity and kind of African traditional ways, perhaps. I know it from my rural. I grew up on a subsistence farm in North Missouri.
Oh, okay.
And the couples. This was falling apart when I was growing up, but I got wind of this kind of decision making, because when people, you know, the couples, when farm couples who really talked with each other. Now, some households are like war zones where the parents are at odds with each other. But the homes where people really talk with each other and work things out, then they talk with themselves, and then they talk with their women friends and their men friends and the other couples nearby. And eventually, a decision becomes clear as to what to do with the farm or what to do with the production or how to deal with a difficult child. And I watched that very traditional style of decision making happen. It was almost going out of existence because the cash economy and the exodus of youth and the aging population was why we were becoming a rural ghetto in the 1970s when I was in high school, and so we lost it. But I did see the end of it, and it's very much the way you describe
it. You know, the book of Proverbs says that in the multitude of counselors there's safety. And I grew up even in a more rural surrounding where people, the community was more important than the individual. I seem to get the feeling here that in America, the individual is more important than the community, which I think has led to a number of really strange psychopathology.
So can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I see people and they talk about me. I have my dreams, I have my vision. And you hear songs and books written about how you can be the best you can be. And then you're wondering, but why you are being the best of this? Where are the others? Where is your community?
Right.
How will it fit into the role you... Well, then the other thing is role play. What role do you play in the community?
Yeah.
Just being a role model. Yeah, well, okay. But what do you do in the community?
Right.
What is that you do in the community? What does your community require of you? How do you bend your desires and your needs and your goals and your skills to a community's goal?
Right. And I think what happened was in the United States nearly all of the 19th century and much of the 20th century, it was the idea that the individual made decisions within the context of community.
Yes.
And that's what you're talking about in Africa. The individual decides, the community will honor the decision, but the community is a heavy player in the decision.
It is.
But what happened is there was a glorification of kind of Horatio Alger kinds of stories of individual success, and with the elaboration of the economy and the affluence, it's just gone off the deep end here. And we have lost the ability to see our lives in the context of the communities in which we live.
And we're paying for it big time. Is it not funny to hear people say, my psychiatrist, my therapist, my this? And I just those are individuals you need when you're out of equilibrium. So it's not like it's not a status symbol, you know, I'm not saying that I'm not knocking down psychiatrists. I'm just saying the way we now, it's like, you know, I go to the gym, I go to the this. Well, if we were really living healthy lives, why do you have to go to this place where you have to walk out your sweat? Where is the community? Where is the playground? Where is the market square?
Isn't work 3 miles from home? And that 3 mile walk is all the exercise you need twice a day.
Or helping a neighbor to repair his roof, or cutting their lawn, or happy to come together, cut trees, and do a few things. Why is that not a form of exercise? I always tell people, come cut my lawn for free. You've done all your exercise.
Those are powerful insights. And actually, they involve building up the unpaid part of the economy, which we don't even value here anymore. And yet so much of our lives is spent, the majority of our lives are spent in unpaid labor, but we don't honor that.
And it's everything cannot have, the most important things in life cannot have an economic value. There is no way to put value to the love a mother has for a child. There is no way to put value to a friend who comes to sit by your bedside when you are in the hospital. And so most of the things that truly mean a lot to us, they're not taxable. We cannot put an economic value to them. But then we structure our lives to be weighed on that economic scale first and foremost. You know, somebody plays in the NBA when it get, and you know, so that shows how important he is. But that's really, then these people all crash, and then they need a community.
What I am impressed by is that you have chosen to be in Ithaca, which, while we have all of the attributes of culture and fine and awareness, and we don't have a strong community here. They're weak, and we're like the rest of the country, but we're a little bit ahead, probably 10 or 20 years ahead of the rest of the country in terms of that breakdown of community, and we need it. So I'm really impressed to see you here. And let's go to the next song. And do you want to introduce it?
This is actually Roots Rock Reggae by Bob Marley. We can talk about Bob Marley for another 10, 15 hours.
But
I like this song because this one actually, my older sister who passed away in 1998, I used to go to her place. I would put some records on her record player. Rastaman Vibration was one of the albums she had. Uh-huh. And I used to listen to this over and over. And since her passing, every time I play this, it just reminds me of her. But also of the struggle that we had just to get out of the constraint we laid in with just growing up as a child. So Roots Rock Reggae, you know, Bob Marley saying we're bubbling on top of 100. Just, you know, for my people. So it's
getting out and getting ahead, and in honor of your sister who's died.
Yeah.
Music, root rock reggae,
And that's Roots Rock Reggae and Bob Marley and the Wailers. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. And this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues of our lives. And our guest on this hour is Aloja Airewele. And we are really glad to have you here this morning.
I'm Thank
really
you glad. For having me. Thank you for having
and,
me.
And so that was Roots Rock Reggae and kind of the centering and out of which you kind of go to live. What are the issues that you care about as a resident here in Ithaca, as an immigrant, as a person who's worked here at the Friendship Center, dealing with people in transition and homeless and people kind of looking for a way on to the next place, as well as physically, as well as emotionally and spiritually? What do you care about?
Now, because I've been a big recipient of there is a healthy community, a community where we can all experience grace as much as possible. And having worked with people who we call homeless, and actually I have seen them from a community better than people who are well-educated and well-situated in life, because they have to deal with so little, and so basically have to deal with the essentials and be done with the superfluity of life. But I really, and so in that regard, or in working under that situation, I ask myself, what is it that what is the one thing that I could give to these individuals? If there was just one thing, and one is their own spiritual development. Mm-hmm. If when you read the Gospels, what we call the Sermon on the Mount, it's done in two ways in the Matthew and Luke's Gospel. In Luke's Gospel, it just says, "Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." In Matthew's Gospel, it says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." But the spiritual development of every individual is very important to me, mm-hmm. because that can be had without money, can be had with it. Wherever you are, you can be in prison, but individuals need to grow spiritually. And so that's number one.
And over half of our listening audience is not religious. What does spiritual mean? What does spiritual development mean?
Every human being should be able to take a step backward and say, what am I here for? I know there are some who mm-hmm. don't think there's any reason, but as a child, is it possible that we have seasons? Everything seems to be quite rhythmical. Mm-hmm. You and I, we have faces that there's a symmetry to it, and there is no reason behind our being. For those who think there is a reason, it would be good to just take some time mm-hmm. in their day-to-day life. Why am I here? What is it? Because we will all live, we will die. So,
right.
And we won't be here to know whether people remember us or not. We cannot control that. But while I'm here, am I positioned in a way where I can really say within myself, yes, that's life.
Yeah,
this is life.
And I just, out of respect for those who are not religious, they do that too, but they do it in a different language, in a different way. And when you want a person to become, to grow spiritually, what are the skills, what are the things you want them to become more in touch with who they really are and what their purpose is? And once they do that, what happens? What changes?
I use my story. I tell people that I came into an understanding of my spiritual life and connection with the Creator out of grace. I was 16 years old just going with my brother to his congregation, and he really did not pressure me. But I saw for a moment, a beauty mm-hmm. in the young people who were singing in the choir. And there was nothing terribly wrong with my own life. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, like some people say, I was a great sinner. I didn't feel that. Mm-hmm. But I wish that I could be where God, the Maker, wanted me to be. And I said, my brother mm-hmm. didn't know,
right.
can you work within me to be in the center of what it really means to be alive, of your grace? That's all I said. And over the course of time, I started to understand the things of forgiveness, of mercy and of goodness and of, just what we call guidance, beginning to understand God as a shepherd. So I always tell people that there is grace, and that if they can, because if they look through their lives, they would have encountered grace in many ways.
Yes.
And being able to, so it is this purposeful pursuit of the grace that they encounter.
Right.
See, they bring it to the maker. So I always use my story.
Yeah, and I want to back up and pick some things out of that story that are really salient, really important, I think, to people who don't have a religious background. One, this experience of faith or grace, as you call it, happens only when you are freely offering yourself in a relationship. It can never be coerced. So those people who use coercion, either in religious, trying to get you to do something that you don't feel genuinely drawn to, or scientific skeptics who try to beat you over the head with something you don't really, that never works.
It doesn't.
That never works.
It doesn't.
And so your brother had either the good sense, or just you had the luck of the moment to be able to wander into this space with openness. And in that openness, you saw something that was compelling, that pulled you. Yes. And you decided to follow it. And in a fundamental kind of, to say this in secular language, you were empowered to live your own life in that moment.
Yeah, the psalmist says, it talks about, God, you have laid your hand upon me, and, basically I'm following you, and I said I will.
Yeah.
One of my greatest teachers, A.W. Tozer, said that the grace of God is always previous. God is before. You mm-hmm. follow. We are not the originators of that. And it is those, you cannot, when the temple was, or the tabernacle in the desert was about to be set up, the Lord said to Moses, tell those, whoever, whose heart moves him or her to make a donation. It has to be that their heart moved mm-hmm, them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's sometimes it's called free will offering. The we in this country cherish very much what we call freedom. Well, yeah. So does the Almighty.
Yeah.
That's why we can argue with him. Yeah. So does the Almighty. The Almighty really, really treasures what we call free
and,
will.
And it's also your notion of community, because when I'm standing here making a decision, I have this community around here of all these options and opportunities that I'm clueless about until I engage it. But I have to choose. And when we don't see the community, I mean, what I'm hearing in your spiritual growth is you want people to see all that is around them haven't seen before.
Yeah, that's it. No one walks alone. Yeah. We've heard it in many songs, and nobody's original. Was it not Waldo Emerson who said, we're all a quotation from our ancestors? There is none of us who does not build on what somebody else either has laid material. We bring our own to it and to weave this fabric of humanness.
Humility and conviction.
They are the chief of graces, which is, I think pride is mankind's greatest enemy. I really think so.
Right. Pride, when it becomes a puffed upness, but the skillfulness, pride can also mean simple skillfulness, and that is the dignity.
You can be proud of, a humble person is not one who dishonestly says, oh, no, I'm not that when I'm that. It's just, it helps you to truly be where you're supposed to be.
Right. To not
and
take
then you
up
are not
space.
Threatened by others being in places where they too are supposed to be.
Right.
You are able to celebrate that without demeaning yourself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're not threatened by someone who moves at a faster speed. And you do not look down on one who moves at a slower speed. Actually, Khalil Gibran, in his prose poems, talks about that. I really was struck by what he talked. I'm not, beneath the tallest giant. I'm not, taller than the shortest pygmy. He just talks about the fact that we're part and parcel of mankind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the meanings, the core root meaning of the word salvation is to make a space for. And once that space is made for, that's what we can occupy. And we will occupy different spaces over time. And this is what you're saying. And helping people who feel like they have no place, who are homeless or who are bereft of a place to be, is helping them to discover the place that is possible.
Yeah, that is it. There. So when you were asking, you know, what are the issues you care about? So the other things like, you know, healthcare for all. Why is it that, why am I concerned about healthcare? It's so that people are not weighed down by ill health, so they cannot be who they're supposed to be, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, walk in grace and contribute to their community. Or we're talking about you know, inequality or things that we are seeing are the violence, the mm-hmm. you know, the meaningless what we call it meaningless, but just the violent speech, mm-hmm. actions, the need for some human beings to totally dehumanize others, right. Just, you know, or violently abuse them. Those things, you know, they worry us, but they are symptoms. And it is my major thrust has always been, what is it that puts us at a disequilibrium? What can bring us back there? Mm-hmm. So is that conversation I'm very interested in, whether I'm working on the library board, for instance. I'm looking for a community where people can, you know, come into a place of learning. But what are they learning? They are learning about others, themselves, of yesterday, today, mm-hmm. possibly thinking about tomorrow, so that they can be healthy individuals to help every one of us get to right. this place where we can exhibit the fine qualities. And I really feel that the human being is well endowed. You know, where we can be free of those, you know, constraints that, you know, put manacles on our feet, so we can't really walk free.
I'm imagining that the constraints are things like thinking that's stuck in a rigid pattern, or addictions, or
yes.
or not letting other
hopelessness.
People care, hopelessness, or not letting other people care for us when we can't fix what we have mm-hmm. that needs to be, and not offering others our skills. Those are all the ways in which we get stuck.
Yes. Yeah. And the it does take some courage to, I have to also ask myself, I have to, you know, constantly find out why I'm pushing for certain things. But the beauty of every one of us being what we should be, I've been in a few communities, I've experienced a few times in my life where I've been in a place where I could really see that individuals were just right. They were, it didn't last for too long, but where they were, everybody was watching out for the other, and there was excellence. I've been right. in a few places where I've seen excellence.
And when I have seen it, what I have seen are, there are people who are unself-conscious in the sense that they're not worried about the self. They embrace and take what others have to offer, and they give what they have without a lot of negotiation or conflict. It moves almost in a rhythmical, easy way. And as things change, people may be hurt or they may be excited, but the whole, there's a lift and a fall that everybody goes through in reaction to each other without trying to control or manipulate each
yeah,
other.
And that is the, you know, this space, this arena we call, you know, of humanhood or personhood. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And it's a journey that can only be made with hands joined together.
But it's the journey of the individual.
The individual
alone, yeah, with hands, yeah, that, joined
and
together.
That is it. You join your hands, but you're still your entity, because yeah. you have to hold somebody's hand. You have to reach out your hand and make the grasp. If you stretch out your hand to me now, and I don't grab it, there will be no linkage. So yep. that's still within my control, whether I actually join my hand. Mm-hmm. And what frees us to join our hands is to, I think, trust in the other, or in the motivation of the other. It can be brought about in different ways. I'm sure you've had it where you go to a place and you really feel welcome. You mm-hmm. feel there is a sense in which these people, they are for my well-being.
Right, right. And in this culture, we tend to think that you have to do something that demonstrates to me that I can trust you. And trust is a conditional thing. But the trust that you're talking about, which is more of a traditional culture thing, is we know that if we're going to thrive, if we're going to do well, I have to lead with trust for you because I don't know what's possible. I don't know what I have that you may need. I don't know what you have that I may need. But we need to be open to each other and positive, because that way we will discover. If I'm not trusting, then we'll never discover what each other has to offer. That's trust in a traditional faith sense.
Yes, and it's how life is built. How many of us today, when you wanted to drink water from your faucet, were you saying, oh, I hope no, deranged person when I'm put, poisonous thing.
Right, right.
We live on trust. We actually give out the trust, and then
more than we recognize.
Rather than we actually most of the time hoping that people will be, will check themselves based on the trust that we've already put out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You go to see your doctor. Mm-hmm. You don't know whether the doctor, you're trusting that the doctor will do the right thing. So we do it a lot.
And we need to do it more.
We need to do it more. It's only when we come to some very important relationships and very, foundational, that we begin to demand that the other or those around us, they prove to us that we can trust them.
We have become most destructive of the relationships that can give us the most,
yes.
And we've become most supportive of the relationships that in some ways have the least to give us.
That's it. And but then the other thing also is that, there's a saying that do unto others what will you have them do to you, which is the teaching of the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's one of the most difficult things I've ever had to contemplate, because I keep saying, really? And I think that's my own growth process, because it demands a lot on you to begin to understand how do you want things done to you.
Right. And you're right. It forces you to become critical about what you ask for. The problem with the traditional English statement of the golden rule is that all ethics is self-reflective. But if you do to others what you would want them to do to you, but the ethic is, you got to really come to terms with what you want. And when you do that, you see that other people want different things and they need different things. And if I'm going to be in relationship with them, I have to give them things that I don't necessarily want, but they do.
Yeah.
And that's powerful.
That's powerful. And that's so in that golden rule, because the one who was doing the teaching
mm-hmm.
is Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And the foundation of personal,
that which is hateful.
It is actually, so in all in the Torah, you hear the Lord saying, I ask you to do this because I am the Lord. So the love the Lord your God with all your, then mm-hmm. you shall love your neighbor, but say, I am the Lord. So the reason we're doing that is I am the Lord. So in other words, it's the root of what we call ethics. It's not so much in me, but it's in relation. It's in me being able to be grounded mm-hmm. to the source.
Right.
Eventually I'll play a song for you, which, where we're talking about things that matter a lot to me. One is friends, mm-hmm. friendship. It's one area that it's one of the most beautiful things that I have ever experienced on earth.
And what you have described in other language is covenant. In a covenant relationship, I do for you what you cannot do for yourself. Not what you can do, because that's your stuff.
That's your stuff.
And you do for me what I cannot do for myself, but I need in order to thrive.
That's
you thrive because of me, I thrive because of you, and we both have choices.
I couldn't have said it better. I learned that. I have to copy that from you.
I wrote a dissertation on economic development and that topic.
Well,
let's go to your song. What's the song?
So I actually want to play a bassoon concerto by Vivaldi, and this it reminds me of my golden friends, especially two friends who were from Israel when I was in medical school, and on and nearer. But this, it has a lot of story to it. I remember I almost went into, it was a time in London when I had to go back to their home to record this song, because mm-hmm. it means so much to me.
This was the second trip when you were in exile
from
Nigeria.
And I had listened to this originally in Nigeria. But from being with them, On and Nearer, On was a big collector of music, every kind of music. So when I went back to England, I found I didn't have it. But I knew if I went to On, who was now living in London, he would have it. Okay. And then I got this. So this is, from
Vivaldi.
Vivaldi, who is one of my favorite composers.
And you're listening to a bassoon concerto in A minor, number 498 by Vivaldi. And our guest on this hour is Aloja Aherewele.
Thank you.
I will get it more or less right, more or less the time.
It's getting better all the time. Yeah.
And I thank you for your sense of humor and for allowing me to laugh at myself on that too. Because many times when we come to differences where we can't quite do it right, it just matters that we try.
Yes, and that's really all. I mean, that's the effort is, it's commendable.
And so, Aloja, what have you learned that's kind of forced you to change a deeply held commitment? How have you had to kind of reinvent what matters in your life?
Yeah, I just played a piece, and I said to you that was something I got from my Jewish friend who I met in Nigeria. And in many ways, I have a very, very, my kids will almost think that I'm, you know, they say I'm very pro-Israel.
Right.
But more in the sense that I really believe that there is a reason for which, you know, the Almighty called Abraham to bless the whole of mankind. Years ago, I was really very convinced that Israel needed to have all the land and, you know, that was whatever means necessary. Having read the stories and of the Holocaust and of the early struggles that the young nation had with the Arab countries. But as time has gone on, I've become very sensitive to the things that go on in Palestine. And when I say this, there's a difference between what politicians do, whether on the Israeli side or any other country. It's different from the mandate of God. And I say this in a very, you know, with all seriousness. I have started to think of what is the peaceful way for Israel and Palestine to coexist. Is it, I look at the various injunctions of God in the prophets of justice, of you know, being able to, you know, look at the foreigner and you know, and treat them in the way that actually is in keeping with what the nation of Israel was called into. And I look at these political leaders and I'm really not sure that I agree with them now with their sentiments. And they use a lot of nationalistic phrases to say this is what they're doing. But I always say, would the Almighty really have sanctioned, you know, the way that we treat these, you know, people from, you know, what we call the West Bank and the others. Yeah. So
the Palestinians,
over
whether they're Christian or
so
Muslim,
I have
or secular.
Over time really had to re-educate myself. I have not, my support for Israel has not waned at all. And we can talk about that. It has. But I am no longer willing to support a politician or a political agenda that destroys all of the things that the prophets, you know, who represented God, this God who gave this land, you know, was very mm-hmm. concerned about how we treat the foreign, how we treat other fellow mm-hmm. human beings. You know, there's a large swath of evangelicals who I've worked with that, you know,
Israel,
but I'm asking them, I think they can do something better, which is to actually inform the Israeli leadership that there is a call to justice mm-hmm. by the same God who gave them that land. And right. we can encourage them in this. And it might actually bring a better solution than this constant right. spending of money, you know, on wars, on arms, on this, and nobody eventually right. has the piece of the pie. So that's one area. I know this, for those who are listening, this is not long enough for me to adequately state my right. My position. But you were asking what an area. Yes, okay. Years ago, I would have told, yep, every right. land from Jordan to the sea. Mm-hmm. I'm more now thinking of, well, what is the process of right. actually coming right. into that promise or into that reality?
Or are the Israelis damaging themselves by bad behavior? And you've come to honor that as well as honor the state of Israel, but also honor the Palestinians.
Yeah, it's beginning to bother me that the, like Bob Dylan said, my conscience is beginning to bother me today. Now, will Israel be safe like this?
Yeah. I want to go to one last question before we switch to our final song. What do you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, annual basis to restore yourself? What are the actual practices that you do, body, mind, heart, to kind of keep yourself in this landscape of grace, which is where you began the conversation?
My first, whenever I wake up, or even sometimes when I'm still in bed but I'm already awake, I just give thanks to the Almighty. It's the acknowledgement of the fact that I am not of the grace that I've received. So I'm always careful to spend a few minutes in mm-hmm. meditation. And, you know, I have the worries of yesterday on my mind, but I push them aside.
Right.
Just to first be thankful for, because of all people on earth, I have no reason to complain. I'm one of the wealthiest individuals on earth. Not by much, but I can tell you that. Just from mm-hmm. where I've come, the things I have experienced, mm-hmm. What God has blessed me with, I really think, of all people, I have no reason to complain. So in the morning, I really want to be aware of that and just spend some time. It could be, sometimes I go, like in the last few days, I've been going by, Cayuga Lake, just toward park, and just looking at the dogs, the ducklings, who did not have to take swimming lessons. They just pile in the water that I cannot survive in 10 minutes. And it reminds me of it centers me, the lilies of the field, the birds of the air, if God so much cares for these ones, how shall he not mm-hmm. care for you, all little ones of little faith? So I start there. But the other thing is I try not to, what the things that go into me are very important. What I allow as thoughts, what I read, what I listen to, I listen to things that affirm what I know to be true,
mm-hmm.
what I know to be noble, what I know that will help me walk towards humility. I try to move away from things that are superficial, cynical,
mm-hmm.
And
or
not,
partial,
not or contrived as much as possible. It doesn't necessarily mean that I don't like something critical. I don't mind that.
No. But what I hear you saying is that you focus on an abstract statement of something which has a tremendous focusing effect on you to keep you on the good the real.
Yes, because I figure that I'm 52, that if at this point I'm no longer searching, I'm no longer searching, I'm walking on the road that has been shown me, and it's a long road.
Yeah.
I can't spend 52 years searching.
Right.
I'm done with the search. I'm about to walk. I'm walking now.
Yeah.
So that's how I see it.
Yeah. And you need all the things in the compass that can keep you focused.
Yes.
Aloja Ahirewele, it's really good to get to know you.
Thank you very much, Eric, for inviting me to this. I read some stuff on your website, and I'm shocked that I had not known about it before now. So it's actually my honor. I really, thank you for thinking about me.
It's good to have you. And you're going to close with André Crouch?
Yes, my tribute. This is a song that best encapsulate what I feel in response to this grace that I have been allowed to walk in and experience.
Save me. And with his power, he has raised.